You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, market uncertainty. What do you do? Do you go or do you stay, as the song goes? Should I go or should I stay? Or just not decide anything and let the market decide it for you? Well, that is the question here. And perhaps we can get an answer. Right now, we've got Dr. Guy Baker on with us, and you find Dr. Guy at Wealth Teams Alliance, wealth-teams.com. Hey, Guy, it's great to have you on the show. So tell me your market philosophy. You've probably been through one or two more bear markets than I have. Is this bear market, if we're in fact going into one, different than all the others, or is this one unique?
Well, hi, Carrie. It's great to be with you this morning. And, I do appreciate that question because I think that's a question that's on the mind of many retail investors today. And, the best answer I can give is that markets go up and markets go down. Okay. And if you look at the history of the market going back 95 years, there have been a lot of troughs and there have been a lot of peaks. But over time, the market goes up and the historical return on the market is about 10%. So the question you have to ask yourself is, if the historical return on the market has been 10% over the last 95 years, is there any reason to believe that the market is not going to continue to perform at that rate over the next 20 years or 30 years? So if somebody is short term in their thinking, in other words, what do I do with my money for the next year? Probably the market's not a good place. But if they're 35, 40, 45, 50, somewhere where they've got 10, 20, 30 years left to invest their money, then being in the market's a great place. But as I mentioned to you in an offline conversation, if you're in the market, stay in the market. If you're out of the market, you might want to wait a little bit until there's some stability before you get back in.
All right. So that leads us to the issue of timing. And from what you're telling me, Guy, you're not an advocate of timing the market.
Well, as you mentioned in my introduction, I have a doctorate. I'm a PhD in investments. And so I've read all of the academic literature that's been written over the years on the market performance. There is absolutely no evidence that anybody can time the market effectively year in and year out. So the question is, do you want to get lucky with your money or do you want to take a risk?
All right. So I do know some traders, and traders being short-term creatures of habit have been very successful, people that I know. And they've been so successful so consistently. It's not just a game of chance or law of averages. But for myself and most of you out there, you probably don't have the temperament to be a trader.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. There are obviously situations that are not the norm. What I'm talking about is money managers who have long-term track records over 25, 30 years. There's been studies done. The last study I knew about was done by Dr. Ken French. I think there were like 275, 280 money managers, managers of mutual funds that were in that study, and less than 2% of them had a long-term track record that they could attribute to anything other than luck. Everybody else said they just got lucky, and hit the market at the right time.
Okay. So then the question is, what do you buy? What should you be putting your money into? Mutual funds, it seems to me, for various tax reasons, estate planning, et cetera, have kind of paled compared to ETFs. What's your take on that?
So from an income tax perspective, ETFs make a lot more sense than mutual funds because you don't have the gains and losses in an ETF that you have with inside of a mutual fund, and you have the fees that go along with that. So I would suggest that ETFs make sense. But you asked a bigger question, and that is, where do you invest your money? And the answer to that question is, do you buy individual stocks and try and pick the best stocks? Or do you invest in markets and trust that the market is going to do the best over a long period of time? And so all the evidence, again, going back to the academic studies that I've had the privilege of doing, it shows that picking stocks is, again, more like a gamble. And yeah, you can get lucky, but over a long period of time, if you study a lot of companies, they're not here today, okay? But the markets are. So what if it's safe money that you want to invest and get a reasonable return over time, you're far better off investing in a largely diversified portfolio with low fees and just let it run.
Okay. Now the question, what about dividends, yield? Do we care about yield? Do we care about it only when the stocks are low and they're yielding high? And should you just be concerned about capital appreciation?
Good question. So what is a dividend? A dividend is a distribution of income. And why is that important? Because the value of a stock is determined by the multiplier that's applied by the market to the income. So, all stocks are priced based on the projected income of that company, the future value of a present value income stream, okay? So if you're reducing that income stream with dividends, what did you really do? All you did was you took some money off the table, put it in your pocket, instead of allowing it to continue to compound in that stock. So the question then becomes, which is more important, income or appreciation? So if you want appreciation, you're better off reinvesting the dividends and continuing to dollar cost average over a period of time. If income's more important, then dividends are great, but you just have to realize that you're reducing your appreciation.
All right. And then when we get into life cycles of companies, right? When companies are growing in their earlier days, they don't pay dividends. They don't even think of it because they're reinvesting all that capital and hopefully their growth rate is above average. And therefore, they're able to compound those earnings. And then you reach a point where you're still somewhat growing your growth company like Apple, and then you start paying out a dividend. Really, do you look for growth only, or do you look for larger, more stable companies, I guess is the question.
So I think of the market like the ocean. You're in your little dinghy with your portfolio and you're kind of being taken by the tides. But underneath the ocean are all of these currents. And so if you look at all the riptides and currents that take place under the ocean, in the market, there are three basic currents. Okay. One is the size of a company. One is the net worth of a company. It's assets minus liabilities. And the other is the profitability of a company. And if you look at the literature that's documented in 5 Nobel Prizes, the best asset class over the last 95 years that's grown at a 14% plus compounded rate of return for 95 years, okay, is small cap value funds, small companies that have a lot of assets, okay? The worst performing company is small cap or market is small cap growth companies. So if you put a dollar into large cap growth, for instance, it'd be worth about $5,500 today going back over the last 95 years. If you put it into small cap, it's worth about $3,500. If you put it into large cap value, it's worth about $17,000. And if you put it into small cap value, it's worth $135,000. Okay. So clearly, small cap value makes the most sense, but most people don't have any of that in their portfolio.
Okay, and that's the AAII philosophy, basically, American Association of Individual Investors, and following them for decades now. Basically, small growth stocks outperform over time, and sometimes they become big growth stocks. So let's look at a company like Tesla. All right. Probably, in my opinion, on many levels, one of the most fascinating companies ever to form. We don't need to talk about government largesse and government subsidies and all that. That's kind of besides the point. But it's growing by leaps and bounds at this point. Even while the overall industry is declining, Tesla's sales continue to increase. I know we're not asking you for a buy or a sell advisory here, but what do you make of a company like Tesla?
Well, in my mind, Tesla is obviously a fascinating company, based on its track record. But to the best of my knowledge, and I haven't looked recently, I don't think they've made a profit yet. So it really speaks against what I was saying earlier, which is that the value of a stock is the multiplier applied to the present value of a future value income stream. So, should you have some in your portfolio? Probably. Should you bet the bank on it? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think after the recent decline, we're basically looking at a PE ratio, as they've been profitable the past four quarters, I believe, of 97. Earnings per share estimate 740, and it's trading right now. It's trading about 717 or so, give or take. It still is a growth company. Their unit sales going up, building factories, and on a per unit basis, they're more profitable than any other car company in the world. But 100 times earnings, that's a big pill to swallow, isn't it?
Well, especially when you figure that that earnings per share multiple is about 15 to 25, somewhere in that range for most other companies.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Agreed. I just find it really interesting. I happen to drive a Tesla now too, but that doesn't blind me to the facts here. And until recently, I wouldn't have done it because I didn't believe whether they'd had any chance of survival or not. Hey, when you look at your mentors, the investor legends out there, who are your top three?
Well, like I said, I really adhere to the five Nobel Prize winning authors that make up our methodology. So Miller, Markowitz, Sharp, Eugene Fama, Ken French, those are all the people that I believe have the best understanding and research on the markets.
Okay. And as far as what drives the markets, like you were saying, it's like the ocean with currents, undercurrents, but what makes them go higher and what makes them go lower?
So the markets are basically a willing buyer and a willing seller. Okay. So you got to figure they're both happy because they wouldn't be buying if they didn't want it, and they wouldn't be selling if they hadn't made the decision they didn't want it. So at last count, there's about $700 billion being traded every day in the market. And so those dollars are what determines the value of the market at the end of the day with supply and demand. So, the question is, why do people buy? Why do people sell? I don't think anybody knows. But overall, the market's very efficient because it determines, based on very large numbers, where the market's going to go. So, Fed rate up, Fed rate down, 10-year treasuries, what's happening with taxes, what's happening with the wars, those are all emotional matters that get factored through the $700 billion that's being traded every day.
All right. So now with computers and everything, I'm glad you brought that up. Program trading, AI, all these things. Program trading is, I know, an anachronistic term for what goes on today, but so much of it is just push button trading without really any consideration of fundamentals or anything else. Do you look more at the technical aspects or do you look at the fundamentals? Which one's more important?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has a tight share structure, and with its current treasury, it can self-fund the advancement of its gold discovery into at least 2022. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, so both of those factors that you just mentioned come into play if you're trying to decide whether to buy or sell specific, stocks, I believe. You know, I think you look at the momentum, you look at, whether it's on the uprise or, those types of things. We don't do that. We invest in markets, and we believe that over the next 20, 30 years, that the markets are going to do exactly what they have done, over the last 95 years. So we don't really care what those stocks are that are inside, what the fundamentals, what the technology is, because we believe, as the Nobel Prizes have proven, that the markets perform based on, the historical expected return.
All right. So you're putting your faith in history. I think it was Eisenhower who said things are more like they are today than they ever were before. So basically, it's a wealth creation machine. They haven't figured out how to break it yet, although they've tried really hard. And maybe it's impervious to even the most determined socialist or communist efforts to really stop it dead in its tracks.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to stop it unless the government takes over all businesses.
Yeah, well, there are those who believe that is the inevitable path, and they're trying their hardest. They usually hang out in Switzerland around this time every year. And, so on to a more contemporary topic, cryptocurrencies. Do you have a viewpoint there?
Yes, I do. It's popular among those that agree with me and unpopular among those that don't. one of my favorite stories, which is a lie, is the tulip bubble in the 1500s. And the reason I say it's a lie is because the story is a lot bigger than the truth about what really happened there. But the idea behind it is the same. If you've got enough people believing, and they hold hands and they continue to do what they believe in, then it supports it. And as soon as they stop believing, then the support falls away and then it collapses. The thing about currencies is, what's the stability and the support behind it? I don't see any stability and support behind crypto. There's nothing backing it up. And as long as everybody holds hands, it's going to be fine. But let them let go. I think you got problems.
All right. So we get into bubbles. All right. Historically, before the Federal Reserve existed, central banks, you pretty much had one bubble at a time. Excessive speculative market, whether it's tulips, the South Sea bubble, the Louisiana land bubble. Japanese stocks. That's not the most
called the tech bubble.
The tech bubble.
2000.
But now with the Federal Reserve and modern monetary theory, it seems to have been repudiated recently by Chairman Powell. You can have multiple bubbles all getting inflated at the same time. So it's a different kind of environment. What happens when all those bubbles pop?
Well, I think the question is, do they all pop at the same time? So if you study bubbles, which I did with this PhD that I did, there's two types of bubbles. Okay, there's the technological bubble, industrial bubble, those types of things. And then there's government bubbles. So, if the government creates a bubble like it did in 08, 09, then you've got some major economic forces that the market isn't prepared to deal with. Okay. And fortunately, the market did deal with it, but it was long after the fact and long after the bubble burst. If you're dealing with industrial bubbles, you know, technological bubbles, then the market's going to take care of itself over time. So, yeah, they'll pop and people will get hurt by them. But if you invest in markets, as I've suggested, then those bubbles kind of ebb and flow within the market, and you're not going to get hurt the same way as you would with a tech bubble if all you did was put all your money into technology companies that were not making any money.
Okay. And inflation. All right. Everybody's talking about inflation. You and I have lived through other inflationary cycles before the 60s, 70s. We actually remember what inflation really is. I think the world is going through a huge learning process here, learning the true effects of inflation, profligate spending, deficits, all of that. Your take on the future and how it, specifically how it affects your investments?
Okay, so this is not the first time that the world has learned these lessons. It's just that they don't, you know, you get new politicians who haven't learned it and they think they can do it better, right? But inflation is necessary in a vibrant, growing economy. And let me give you an example. If you put $1 into the S&P 500 in 1926, it would be worth around $15,000 today. If you took out all the inflation and just grew it at its real value with no inflation in it at all, it's worth $900. So that's about 3.5% inflation historically over the last 100 years. So, you know, where do you put your money in an inflationary environment? Well, you put it into assets that are going to increase in value because of the inflation. So the three places probably to look at are the stock market, commodities, and real estate. So if you know, as long as you're not scared to death and sitting on your hands, you can take advantage of that. The problem today, of course, is that we've got conflicting issues going on that's causing the market to be a little bit disruptive. So, you know, we may even get stagflation for a time. But you have to trust the markets. The markets over time is the realistic measure of what's really taking place.
And that is a great point. We don't really know what the true inflation rate is because however they measure it, it's not consistent over time and you know all these things that take place. And there's no real way to measure it anyway because, you leave out food and energy. Yeah, well, that's a big part of people's budgets. And then take out rent or add in owner's equivalent rent. It doesn't really give you the truest measure of inflation. Your personal view towards the inflationary cycle we're going through right now, what do you think the Fed will do and how effective will it be?
Well, since I don't particularly like government interference and I'm a free market person, you know, the less they did, the better off we would be. But, you know, the big problem with our inflation today is too many, you know, dollars chasing goods and services. So we've got way too much money in the economy. So at some point in time, that money has to either contract or the economy has to grow in order to bring it into equilibrium. I have an undergraduate degree in economics, so I unfortunately studied all the wrong things. they didn't teach supply side, they teach demand side, but managing through money. I think over time the markets are going to work it out, and you know the money will contract, the velocity of money will slow down, and then it'll speed up again. And you know the Fed's probably going to raise the rates another 1.5%, I would guess, over the next year, 18 months, who knows how long that's going to take. I can tell you this, a capitalistic society like ours cannot exist vibrantly on 0.5% interest. You know, we need to have the interest rates in the 3-5% range.
Yeah, well, they need to measure risk. Interest rates traditionally measured borrower risk. And when you have 0% rates, there's no risk. Everybody's equal. And they're not. Somebody who's barely eking out a living is not as credit worthy as Apple Computer, obviously. But yet our markets don't take that into account when you have these artificially low interest rates. As far as looking at the...
Let me just jump in here and say one thing since we're talking about inflation. You know, a lot of people are you know, very worried about their bonds because as interest rates go up, bond values go down. But what they have to remember is that bonds mature at their face value. So whatever their bonds are worth today is not a true reflection of the value of that bond if they hold on to the bond till the maturity. So, it's scary to see your bond portfolio dropping 15-20%, but if you hang on to them, you know, you won't lose that money.
All right. So deficits, whether it's the government deficit, the trade deficit, all these deficits around the world, are they unsustainable? How much longer can they continue on?
As long as they can print money, I guess they can continue on for as long as the people put up with it, right?
That's the question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you had the French Revolution. At some point in time, the peasants will revolt. So it's certainly not the elite that's going to revolt against it. So it just depends on how long people will put up with it.
That's a good question. So with lockdowns, etc., people hit the end and they really did start to get blowback, but nothing came of it because they backed off effectively and the draconian measures up in Canada. But I think a growth industry for the future is guillotines here. What do you think, Guy?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the biggest problem we have in our country, not trying to be political here, is a unfair justice system. You know, we've got two levels of justice, and until the people demand that justice be equal across all social stratas, you know, we're headed down the wrong road.
Such a great point. I'm a recovering attorney myself, and I can't, you know, I haven't been through quite as many elections as you, Guy, but a lot. I've never, forget criminal justice reform, that's just letting people out. I have never heard anybody really run on a platform that the judicial system is really in shambles. It needs to be reformed from top to bottom in a way that will actually dispense justice, but more importantly, reinforce the rule of law and see to it that that fairness returns to the system and the rule of law prevails. Nobody has ever run on a platform like that, I guess, for good reason.
Yeah, I guess the question is, you know, do they want to be put under the scrutiny of a real law? You know, I think there's so many criminals that are embedded into our government system today that if they had real justice, it would scare them to death, and they might even have to do things right or go to jail.
God forbid that. Well.
Yeah, I know.
It's craziness. Well, Guy, it's been an absolute pleasure and honor to speak with you. I feel like I'm talking to somebody who really has learned from history, somebody who really does get it. I'm hesitant to just throw my fate into the market, but I do see your point there, and I do see benefits to it. People want to find out more about you. You out there want to connect with Dr. Guy. How do we do that?
Well, you mentioned my website, which is wealth-teams.com. If they can reach us by email, I think there's a phone number on there. I love to talk to people. Our job is not to sell anybody on doing anything. I learned many years ago, people do what they want to do when they want to do it. So my job is just to help them figure out what it is they want to do.
All right. I love it. Great concept. And, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there, as the saying goes. So you got to have some direction and goals. Really important. Hey, if you got a question for Dr. Guy, just shoot me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Don't forget, go to the site and sign up for a free newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Hey, Dr. Guy, it's been an absolute honor, pleasure speaking with you, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed the conversation, and you have great questions.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.